as only two film critics could be. They bonded over movies and the Portland rain. It's the kind of romance only seen on TV. Then one day Jeff had to move away to far off San Diego, where it's sunny every day. Eric had to cry, he said, why, oh why? We have to find a way to make sure our friendship doesn't die. We'll have a long-distance relationship, the kind you see on TV, so you know it's legit. We'll watch our movies alone, and then we'll meet online. Record ourselves a podcast, and everything will be fine. Now we have Movie BS with Eric D. Snyder and Jeff Mayer. It's Movie BS. These critics are best friends forever.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I'm your host, Jeff Bear. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hey, I'm the host of Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. My name is Eric D. Snyder. That there is my co-host, Jeff Bear. Welcome to the show, one and all.
And there could be new ones.
Maybe.
New ones of us.
Oh, could be. Because, yeah, this week.
Do you see what I'm saying there?
I see what you did there, yes.
Okay.
Our new home is on oneofus.net. And we are pleased to be there.
It's very comfortable here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they've given us great treatment. We just got our own room. Breakfast in bed. It's great.
It's really lovely here. Mm-hmm. And what we've decided to do, we're going to revamp the show. So politics are going to come first.
Yes.
And then it'll be a heavy focus on 1970s cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then what do we do after that? What's the third installment of our show?
As always, of course, traffic and weather on the nines.
Yes, that's important. It keeps people up to date.
Mm-hmm. Now, to our regular listeners who are not new, we had some snags with our iTunes feed the last couple of weeks, but that's been all updated now. You might have to resubscribe, maybe. On the other hand, if you were not already a subscriber, now would be a good time to do that.
Yeah, and, please.
And we don't even care if you listen to the show. Just download it.
Just subscribe, because that way one of us...
In fact, it's better if you don't listen to it, honestly.
I like the show by not listening to it.
No good can come from anyone listening to it.
But by subscribing to Movie BS with Baron Snyder, it will make our one of us hosts feel nice. Mm-hmm. They will think it was worthwhile to bring us aboard.
They will think that it is worth the $100,000 a year that they're paying us. That's what you're getting, right?
Wait, how much
are you not? Oh, all right. I'm going to edit this out. But since we did have problems with the last couple of shows, we're going to start today's show by repeating everything we said the last couple of weeks, just to catch you up.
Oh, my gosh. That's every single movie we saw at South by Southwest?
Everything. And the show before that, probably two, just to be safe.
And if you're about to hit the stop button and never listen to us again because this is the first time that you listened and you're like, I don't think I need traffic in my podcast. That was exaggerated. In fact, none of that's true. Mm-hmm. We talk about movies.
Yeah. It's what we call a comedy bit. It's a comedy bit we did there.
And here's the thing. That was off the top of our heads. We didn't write that down, rehearse it, and then bring it to you.
No. When we write something and rehearse it, it doesn't work at all. We've tried that a couple of times. Not in a long time. Yeah, twice. A long time ago, and it doesn't work.
That's right.
Because Jeff can't read. Jeff is illiterate.
But I can recognize the images of words, and I've been able to kind of like bridge gaps. But yeah, sounding things out, come on, that's not happening. All right, so here's what we typically do with this show. Typically, if you guys write us an iTunes review,
yes,
Eric will read it on our show in old-time radio voice. It's a classic bit that never gets old.
Everybody loves it when I talk in old-time radio voice.
And all you have to do, well, in his opinion, you have to give a positive review. But it could also be funny and make
positive
it onto the show.
Positive or funny, yes.
That's right. And then we talk about the week's wide releases, and then maybe some indies that made it to your neck of the woods. Then we will potentially play games, movie-related games. That
we do a question of the week.
We do a question of the week, and the question of the week is something that you can answer on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/...
Movie BS PDX.
PDX. PDX stands for Portland, people.
That's where we started. I like that you're doing the show as if everyone listening is brand new.
Everyone's brand new.
When in fact, we probably have like one new listener, maybe.
No.
Everybody else has been with us all 253 episodes.
Well, as I told everybody at South By, it is your job to grab a person and force them down onto the ground and then put an earbud into their ear and make them listen to our podcast. I think that's the best way to spread the word.
We want to spread the word of our show via assault.
Yes. Here's the thing. You won't forget the first time you heard it.
That's true. Hey, speaking of that, let's talk about Get Hard and all the rape. All the rape in it.
Is that – you want to start with the rape?
Well, I that seems to be the foremost thing on the movie's mind. Here's the thing. Here's a Get Hard. There are some on paper. Here's the joke of Get Hard. You got a white collar criminal. That's Will Ferrell. He's about to have to go to prison for his white collar crimes, which already you know it's a fantasy because what? Since when do people get in trouble for that?
What's the jail?
San Quentin. But since when do those guys have to go to any jail?
Yeah, especially that joke.
Bankers and come on. Anyway, right. But so he has to go to prison. So he hires a black guy who he assumes is a felon to teach him how to be tough in prison and survive. That's on paper. That's the joke.
Mm-hmm.
In practice, the actual joke of the movie is, hey, did you know that in prison there's a lot of rape? Oh, man, the rape in prison. So much raping in prison. All that raping they do.
And since you don't want to be raped, straight guy.
Anybody wants to be raped, that's absolutely true.
Apologize for that. But like, there's specific things in the movie that are also just like, oh my gosh, as a straight guy, how can I dare think of anything in this world?
Right.
And I apologize for ES. It's also, since I want to avoid that, I need to get hard. And the best way to get hard is to be tough. Yes. And the best way to get hard is
I just got that double entendre. Get hard. Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's clever. All right. Sorry.
Yeah. The movie only used it for 1 5-minute bit that never ended. but with that, then it's the idea of okay, let me find an African American and assume he's been to jail, prison, and then assume that he knows how prison works.
Right.
And so that's the extended thing. And what's really weird about this movie is it starts showing us the rich world and the poor world, mm-hmm. and the vast difference of the two, and almost it brings to mind. Oh, I wonder if they're going to give me some enlightenment like Trading Places attempted to do in its comedy form.
Right.
And it thinks it probably does that. But the weird thing is Kevin Hart, our African-American who's never been to prison, By the way,
if I can interject quickly there, I kept thinking that was going to be a big part of the joke. The joke being that he's just this normal guy who's never been to prison, but Will Ferrell thinks he has. And they never really exploited that aspect of it. It didn't – because it turns out he did know how to act in prison. Like it turns out he was really good at training him. Like the fact that he hadn't actually been there didn't matter.
But with that said, it's all the stereotypes of everything. And if you're going to bring up stereotypes, the best thing you can do is enlighten us on the myth of those stereotypes.
Or
make them really funny. Here what they do is they introduce a slew of stereotypes with no enlightenment whatsoever. And that's it. That's what it does the entire stretch of this middle of the film, which is – all of the potential humor, and then the worst part is the beginning and the end have nothing to do with it. Like nothing to do with it because they realize that's not a plot. So then they have to bookend this movie with a really pathetic, maybe he did the crime, maybe he didn't. How can he prove himself?
Right. Well, it seems like I feel like that's a place where the movie cops out too. In the sense that Will Ferrell's character, what's his name? I don't remember what his name is. He doesn't have a name.
Probably does. It's James.
James King. Yeah. James King. That he didn't actually do the crime. He's been framed for it. And I feel like that is telegraphed pretty early on. And it's because the movie wants us to be on his side. Like if we thought the guy deserved to be going to prison, then we wouldn't be as sympathetic.
And then some people watching the movie would actually be like, well,
maybe he deserves to get raped, which is all that ever happens in prison 24 hours a day.
That's it.
I think the movie does bring up obviously some racial issues and class disparity and income inequality. And for the most part, I felt like that stuff, some of that I thought was funny. And I feel like in general, the movie kind of was aware of what it was doing. Like it was, I feel like the people involved, it was not done out of ignorance. I feel like they are smart people. And the guy directed, and it was co-written by the guy who worked on Idiocracy and Tropic Thunder, Eytan Cohen is his name, and a couple of Key and Peele writers. Mm-hmm. So I feel like these are people who kind of know what they're doing here. And more to the point, generally the stuff made me laugh. The rape thing is so interesting because obviously I don't care. You make jokes about rape, and it would be weird to do a comedy about a scared rich guy going to prison and not mention prison rape. Like that would, you know, sure. That's a thing, but you have to make a joke about it. And the movie's only joke is basically, you're going to get raped. Just saying you're going to get raped over and over again. Like they do very little in the way of actually making any clever jokes about it. And that's what's disappointing.
I actually wrote down one that was like, all right, that's kind of a funny play on words, which is simply this: my heart's already been raped. Like Will Ferrell said that at one point. And it's like, you know what? Will Ferrell delivering things and Kevin Hart delivering things, we know that can be really funny.
Yeah, and at least that's something. And there's another one where Ferrell's character is he's practicing trash talking, like practicing threatening other prisoners with rape.
Yes.
And he's like, you're about to get 20 likes on Insta. Right. That line's not like a brilliant joke, but at least it's a joke. At least it's something. And yes. But there's very little of that. Most of the quote unquote jokes about the prison rape are just, man, there sure is a lot of rape. Whoo, I do not want to get raped.
And
that's just disappointing from a comedy standpoint.
From a comedy standpoint, that's disappointing. And from another aspect of it is at one point, Darnell, Kevin Hart's character, is like, okay, since he is clearly not learning and since he is going to get raped, the best thing I can do for him is put him in an environment to test out his skills as someone who can pleasure a gentleman.
Orally.
And that's very awkward. And again, kind of that standard thing of like, the big screen, there's going to be a penis on the big screen,
right.
And that's going to get people to howl with laughter. The one thing with that was kind of a nice surprise, Darnell actually forming some sort of friendship or connection with somebody there. And those are the moments.
That element is totally – and that's totally in there to counterbalance what would otherwise be perceived as, oh, this movie is making fun of gays. They had to make sure that he was not anti-gay. Yeah.
But again, that is proof that they have some sort of awareness going on, which is weird that they go to the well so many times on, the rape stuff.
Yeah.
It is. It's weird that's always the worst case scenario. What also didn't work for me, setting up a prison in a rich guy's house is funny. Setting up the outside is so weirdly not necessary and not a joke. And it's just idiocy with no real cleverness behind it and no biting humor behind it or anything. It's just like, whatever.
There is that one, I think, a very funny sequence where Darnell is basically playing three different types of people that that James might meet in prison. He's playing all three characters, and James is sort of baffled. And I think that combination of Kevin Hart, and he's a motor mouth, and he's fast and quick, and Ferrell being clueless the way he is. I think that works really well together. I thought that sequence was funny. Going back quickly to the the thing where they decide to have James try it just to see if he can be good at it. Because they go to a gay bar and he finds a guy who to practice on. And the thing with that scenario, once you get past the outrageousness of it, the basics of it is good comedy potential of somebody having to do something that he thinks is gross or unpleasant or foreign. Like that basic scenario, plenty of potential there for comedy. But the film can't get past the outrageousness of it. All the film gets as far as, I do not want to put that in my mouth. And that's all they can.
And that's
the only funny thing. It's so weird how this is the one topic that the movie can't stop talking about, but it's also the one topic that the movie can't think of any good jokes to make about.
There you go. Yes,
they can't think of the jokes to make, but they can't stop thinking about it.
Right. Because there are other good moments, even though you've seen it with Will Ferrell before and other comedies before. There's a moment where he gets something stuck in his head. Mm-hmm. And you're like, at first you're like, oh, okay, this is standard because you've seen this in old school or whatever. And there's little bits in there, like when he starts to slur his words and things like that, that it's like, gosh, Will Ferrell is funny. Like the movie makes you remember that, just not enough. Especially because, man, I was so ready for Kevin Hart to have his, like, finally have his breakthrough movie performance that I would be thrilled with. Because he's great in stand-up mm-hmm. and just average in the movies. Like, he's right. becoming the Richard Pryor of our generation in the sense of we can't figure out how perfectly to utilize him, and it's a shame.
Yeah. And yet, when I saw that he was with Will Ferrell, I was excited or mm-hmm. curious because tell me one Will Ferrell fan bigger than me. Tell me a bigger Will Ferrell fan than me.
No.
I
would have thought to say Will Ferrell, but I think he's potentially a little more humble about his fandom towards himself than
probably,
you are.
Yes.
You are all in.
I'm a major Will Ferrell fanboy.
Yeah.
So I was excited for this and the combination of him and Hart.
You tell me Alison Brie is going to be in some lingerie. That's a win for me.
She's in the movie for 5 seconds. Yeah.
Unfortunately. Right. That's pretty much all she does in this film. Which is a waste, just like Craig T. Nelson's in it a little bit, but mm-hmm. not necessarily utilized boss. In any interesting way.
Yeah. It's really just Ferrell and Hart. There's a few other people there, but they're really, those are the only two, major cast members.
Darnell's wife, there's a couple of jokes with her in there that are pretty good where like Darnell tries to show that he can be tougher. Mm-hmm. And I thought there was a good moment there. But
yeah,
that's just a moment. And it could have been utilized much more because, again, if the joke is Darnell isn't like this, if Darnell mm-hmm. always did have the straight and narrow path, if he actually is in a pretty decent financial situation, then you're not getting – the extreme classes, again, you're just stereotypes and ready to attack those stereotypes. And there was just no attack in this movie.
See, and you said before that it starts out showing the difference between the rich and the poor. And I didn't see that. I feel like it's a difference
between the
ultra rich.
No. Literally the opening credits. The opening credits are like, look, here is a black person going through the trash. Here is a white person
in their fancy
car. Like the opening credits right. try to establish that mood.
Yeah, Darnell's.
You,
yeah,
but
Darnell's
then the movie's not that.
Yeah, Darnell's not poor. He's lower middle class or whatever.
Darnell is looking into buying a $300,000 house, and he's the operator of a small, somewhat successful business.
Yeah,
that is who Darnell is.
I wound up saying this in my review, which was for Vanity Fair, vanityfair.com, by the way. I said I don't find the whole thing with the rape as a Will Ferrell fan and also a person who is a gay homosexual. There's some conflict there, but I don't find all the gay related jokes offensive because it's not mean spirited. Like for the most part, the movie is not making fun of gay people. There's like one bit where they're sitting there at the gay club and one of them mentions BJ's and like a gay guy kind of perks up his ears or whatever at the next table. There's a little bit. For the most part, the jokes are not making fun of gays. It's panicky straight guys who are the target. And it's just
Agreed.
It's disappointing because they don't have any other ideas other than being funny. And so to mm-hmm. to paraphrase Seinfeld, it doesn't offend me as a gay. It offends me as a comedian
mm-hmm.
is what it basically boils down to.
And for me, the main thing is once you realize it's not necessarily about accurately getting somebody – ready for prison or class differences or anything else like that, you realize it's just a filler movie where they're like, we know the middle of this film is going to be really funny. And then at the end, we'll straighten out the confusing situation. And they're just wrong in thinking that the middle of this film is really consistently funny.
See, I mostly laughed at a lot of the film other than the one topic where they couldn't think of any jokes, but they kept mentioning it. And the rest is kind of hit or miss, but I really did laugh quite a bit at two-thirds of the movie.
Did you? Okay. Uh-huh. I would say I laughed at about I probably laughed at about 30% of their attempts. And that's enough for me to give it a 5 out of 10. Because I did laugh on occasion. I just didn't laugh nearly as much. I feel like it had goodness. What was the political comedy that Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis did together?
Where they were running for something.
They were running for something. It had the intelligence of that comedy, mm-hmm. which is not a strong, intelligent comedy. It's just playing to that middle of the road crowd, being like, "Hey, you've right. seen this stereotype. Look, now you're seeing this comedian do it." And that's all there is to it.
The campaign, it was called.
The campaign. So yeah, to me, it's a 5 out of 10.
I give it a C+. Disappointing. I think that's the lowest grade I've given a Will Ferrell comedy.
Wow.
Even Blades of Glory was a B-.
So that's a bold statement for you.
It is,
so
yeah.
Keep this in mind, people. It's the worst Will Ferrell movie you can see.
Worst Will Ferrell comedy in which he is the star. Because I feel like he was in something. Wasn't he in some bad, one of the bad Woody Allen comedies?
Oh, it wasn't that bad. No, it was the two Melindas?
Melinda and Melinda or something?
Yeah. I didn't think that was a bad movie.
Maybe. I didn't either. I can't remember now.
Oh, is this you during the show where you start to look things up again? Is that mm-hmm. what you're doing? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's all up here in my head, as all the new listeners believe.
That's the problem. What was that movie called? Melinda?
Melinda Melinda.
Just Melinda Melinda?
I think it was called Melinda Melinda. And like half of it was a drama about a Melinda and half of it was a comedy about Melinda.
Melinda and Melinda. It was called Melinda and Melinda.
Yeah.
All right.
And Will Ferrell was in the comedy part.
Yes, that's right. All right. Let's start to ring a
get
bell.
Hard. Did you?
I gave it a B-, the Melindas. Sorry, never mind.
Oh, nice. I got a chuckle out of the Boys in the Hood reference.
That was funny.
Get Hard.
Yeah, where Darnell is telling his story of being a criminal. Right. That's funny. That's good stuff.
I got a chuckle. I mean, again, it's not – it's just a missed opportunity. That's
missed
it.
Opportunity.
That's what this movie is.
Uh-huh. Because I really thought if anyone can make prison rape really funny and find some new angles on rape, then it would be Will Ferrell, who I have great confidence in as a funny person, and it did not work out.
And see, that was a potentially accidental joke for you, and that would have been in its the top 10 of cleverness for that film.
The new rape angle.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's awful.
It is awful.
It leaves a bad taste in my mouth. All right. Get Hard.
Zoing!
Get Hard. And it then follows.
It follows. Yep. That's the sequence.
It follows.
That's how it goes.
There we go.
It Follows is a movie. It's a scary movie. A horror movie. Fits in that category. It premiered. People first saw this movie at Cannes last year.
And I was going to say. I thought you were those people, but you are not those people.
I was not at Cannes. No, then I saw it. I saw it at Fantastic Fest in September.
Yep. And then
it also had played in Toronto.
And then I saw it at Sundance, where I believe I sat next to you.
Yes, because I was seeing it for a second time.
That's right.
And I was
right.
glad I had, because I had forgotten that I missed like the first 2 minutes of it the first time I saw it.
Which actually does set the stage quite well.
It does. I was seeing it the second time. I was like, oh, I'm glad I saw that. But yeah, this movie's been floating around for a while, and you may have heard people mm-hmm. talking about it. And there's always the risk of overhyping movies. And so we do not like to do that here on Movie BS with Bear and Snyder.
Said, this is the greatest... Oh, wait, what?
It's the single greatest achievement in the history of mankind.
Now, here's the thing. To me, this is a good movie, and we'll talk about it now. Like, it is not...
We don't want to oversell it. Yeah.
I think it's one of those things where a lot of the horror comes from the vibe, comes mm-hmm. from the music,
the
comes
tension.
From the atmosphere,
yeah.
as opposed to this is going to be a thing that's going to make you jump out of your seat 20 times
not at all.
You're going to pee your pants and all
that.
Sort of
really, there's not really the jumping. Yeah. It doesn't really have any gore and violence, not very
that's
much
right.
on screen. It's mostly in the dread and the fear of it. And again, the thing is with hype, even if I actually believe that this is the best horror movie of the last 5 years or whatever. I'm not saying I do feel that way, but even if I did feel that way, I don't want to say it because that sets us up too high for you.
For people
who have not seen it.
And I wouldn't say that because I don't believe that's true for me.
I also probably don't believe that's true, but it is definitely up there.
It's good. It's a good movie. And here's what it's about.
Mm-hmm, here's what it's about. We're in suburban Detroit, and there's a situation where with the young people, you know how the young people are having sex. You know the young people have sex nowadays.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. It's basically you have sex, and if you have sex with the wrong person, then this thing follows you. It.
A force. A it's force.
A it. Force, and I think it's a great title, too, because... One, it doesn't matter what it is, and two, we don't really know what it is. It is a thing. It can change its form, its physical form, and it pursues you relentlessly, but slowly. Oh, the fact that it's slow. The fact that it's slow, that it just follows you slowly and inevitably. The inevitability of it is what makes it so scary.
Yeah, so and what they realize is, and the movie this I would say this is the tiniest hint of a fault for this film. During the middle portion of it, they kind of re-explain it. And I personally didn't need it re-explained because the way that this goes is it follows and you can create distance between it by spreading pretty much this evil STD to another individual by having sex with them. So then you distance yourself from it.
Pass it on.
That's really cool. And by the way, you and I have had past discussions over whether this movie is truly about safe sex versus unsafe sex. And I did research. And you'll be happy to know the director and writer, David Robert Mitchell, does not think a condom simply is the barrier needed to prevent it.
Well, if it were, somebody in the movie would have thought of that.
I understand.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I'm glad to know that I was right.
Yes.
Which I already knew.
And look at me.
Look at you admitting it. In fact, you're the one who brought it up. You didn't have to bring it up. And you did.
That's right.
Well done. And kudos to you.
That's the thing. I enjoy being right. And it's something that I'm used to, but I have no problem saying when I'm wrong.
Obviously the whole thing is a metaphor for STDs or for whatever unwanted consequences of sex, which I think can also be not just STDs, but also the other emotional factors that can play into sex, especially with young people. I feel like any negative repercussion of sex, but especially STDs, is kind of what it's a metaphor for.
The movie actually plays nicely with that, about just a little bit of that like high school romance kind of thing.
Maybe it'll make a difference if I actually love the person as opposed to just being a hookup or whatever. Yeah, and I think all that is very interesting. The vibe, like you mentioned, is full of dread, and it's slow. There's not a lot of like fast camera movement or editing. But the movie doesn't feel slow. It's not slow like boring, but it's methodical.
And with that, again, I think there's – for a horror movie, there's a lot of good camera work. There's nothing sloppy about the film. And you will remember the musical score as opposed to just like, oh, they moved around the corner and there was a blare of music. And, oh, they're going down and it's pounding.
The music is reminiscent. Reminiscent of the 1980s, like John Carpenter scores.
Yes.
And in fact, they use the John Carpenter font in the credits.
Ooh.
And I should look up who it was because it's a great way to describe it. Somebody said that this movie is like John Carpenter meets John Hughes. And I think that's perfect.
Oh, that is very nice.
Yeah. And that really is the vibe that they're going for. Did you notice this also? It seems to be it's unclear when the film is set, which I like, and that's clearly intentional. We don't see any computers or cell phones, but one girl has like a little, she's reading a book on like a little, it looks like a seashell, like a little electronic device.
That's
but other than that, there is a cell phone. Someone does have a cell phone, one.
But we don't see computers.
It is very indistinct of like when it's set, which kind of adds to the unsettling nature of the whole story.
Well, one of the ways we know that it's somewhat around the present or potentially near future or something like that is Detroit. Once we get a glimpse of Detroit, we realize, the city is it's gone through tough times. Yeah. One of the things that I did really love about this movie is as somebody who has a kid, I didn't know if you know that.
I have a kid.
I have a son. He's almost 2.5. I barely mention him, so I don't know. But there's a couple of movies that you watch and you put in the back of your mind, and you're like, you know what? That that could be a teaching moment, even though it's just good entertainment. Mm-hmm. And there is, like, part of me is just like, all right, whenever I have that safe sex conversation with my kid, I'm going to put this on, and then afterwards we can talk. And then I, like, when I have the drug conversation with a kid, I'm going to put on Requiem for a Dream, and then we can talk.
Yeah, I mean, we joke about it, but if you want someone to not necessarily be afraid of sex, but at least think seriously about the consequences of it, this is a pretty good – this would be a pretty good abstinence message.
Yeah,
this
maybe movie, not. Maybe not thinking seriously.
Yeah, but it definitely. Yeah, this movie.
You'll be thinking.
This movie does for vaginas what Jaws did for the ocean. I think. You know what? John Carpenter meets John Hughes. The directors of Paranorman described their own movie as John Carpenter meets John Hughes. Paranorman is nothing like It Follows.
That's true. Well,
I mean,
no, it's not.
only superficially. I want to find a couple of teenagers
in both.
Yeah,
I think.
But yeah. Anyway, so that's It Follows. I give it an A-.
I give it an 8 out of 10. Guess what that means?
It's BS approved.
And because all of you are new listeners, what that means is it goes on a master list. And that master list can be found at moviebs.com. And then one of the headings simply says BS approved.
Yeah.
If it gets an 8, a 9, or a 10 from me and a B plus,
A minus, or A from me.
Yes. From you, then it's BS approved. Mm-hmm. So, you know, late one night, you don't know what to watch. You just go to that list and solved all your problems.
What's a movie that both Jeff and Eric really liked? You may also be wondering, why do we have two different grading scales on the show? And the answer for that is stubbornness.
That's true.
Because those are the ones that we were each using separately before we started doing the show, and neither of us wanted to change.
That's 100% accurate.
And turns out several people have said that It Follows is John Hughes by way of John Carpenter or vice versa. So I guess I don't need to credit anyone specifically. And I guess that means I can use it. There you go.
You said it.
It's out there. Lots of people are saying it. Yeah. What else was I going to say about the grades or something? I don't remember now.
Were you going to say about like how yours is a 12-point scale and mine's a 10-point scale?
It's very hard to convert. Yeah.
It's not. It's not hard to convert.
Well, agree to disagree. It Follows opened in limited release a few weeks ago and then did gangbusters at like the 4 screens it was on. And so this weekend it's expanding to 1,200 screens, which I believe was not the plan. Like they planned to do sort of the platform release and then maybe do some VOD. And I think they were surprised by how well it did in limited.
I think so too, because we have a little bit of knowledge on this, because it was originally going to open in Portland and San Diego the week before. And I think that was going to be a part of their overall plan. But what they realized is they were doing well in that limited release. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to really see how that was and then roll it out in even more cities beyond those lower markets of San Diego and Portland and whatnot.
Yeah. So they pushed back to smaller markets and waited for everything all at once this weekend.
Yeah.
By the way, Jeff lives in San Diego. I live in Portland. We both used to live in Portland. Well, the theme song at the beginning of the show kind of explains our origin story.
Yeah.
You get it. Now it's question of the week, right? Let's do that.
Yeah. It's time for question of the week. Do you have the new music ready that you were working on?
I totally do. If it's ready, I will insert it right here. I'll edit it in right here. So question of the week is, we asked you guys, in honor of our move over here to oneofus.net, we asked if there's any things that we should, change about the show. New stuff. Wait, let me find how I actually phrased the question.
You want me to read it to you? On the occasion of our move to oneofus.net, what changes should we make to the show? New games or segments? Revivals of old ones? Anything you can think of?
Yes. When Brad says all he wants is for the show to actually update in iTunes, that should be fixed now. It's in iTunes now. So you got your wish. Congratulations, Brad. Thank you for the suggestion.
Ken is really good at sarcasm here, but there's something to add. So Ken says, it needs a fancy new title. How about Movie SB with Snyder and Bear? Well,
I
that just can't do. But there will there will be something title-wise being updated.
What?
Some title, some visual title that people will see.
Perhaps, like getting a new logo or something?
Banner, perhaps a banner of it all.
Yeah. The title's not changing, though.
No, but, I mean, you'll see it. You'll see the title differently. You'll never be able to forget it.
Okay.
I hopefully will never be able to forget it.
Adrian said, no changes. If it ain't broke, don't try to fix it. That's nonsense. David says, new set. Spruce the place up. Maybe a couch. I like it. What if we did make it into a video show? All right. We'll table that one. Oh, I don't want to either.
Yeah, okay. Nico says, maybe make a point of each picking a movie or show to recommend each week for viewers to watch at home. Also, more funny voices for the kids listening.
Well, thanks for your suggestion, Nico.
Oh, gosh. Oh, come on.
What if I did the whole show talking like that?
Oh, please don't. Please.
We used to, every week, every single week, we used to, with the new releases, also give a recommendation for, if you don't want to go out to the movies, here's a movie that is like these that you could watch at home. And then we stopped doing that. I remember why.
Why
did we stop?
Lazy.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
But that is a good idea. We should do that. So let's see. For Get Hard, you don't want to go to the theater and watch that. We should just watch Step Brothers. Seems to me like
it is interesting to see Adam Scott as that character now.
For It Follows, let's see, what would be going to watch instead of It Follows at home?
Teenager,
like scary. Spooky. Actually, you know what you ought to do? The we didn't say the name of the guy who directed, wrote, and directed It Follows.
David Robert Mitchell.
He previously made a film called The Myth of the American Sleepover, which played at South by Southwest 5 years ago. And totally different. Well, it's not a horror movie, but it's similar in that it's also about teenagers and stuff. Myth of the American Sleepover is more like a John Hughes thing. Did you ever see it?
Yes.
We talked about it? Okay. I think it's really worth seeing. I think it's a good movie. And
I liked
interesting.
It.
Interesting. It's a small, low-budget thing, but I really, really like it. And I think you should check that out after you've seen It Follows, because you should go see It Follows.
Right. And we both think It Follows is better but different.
Yes, better but different.
Yes.
Eric, not me, a different Eric, suggests maybe a segment where you revisit a film from 5 or 10 or 15 years ago and see how well or not it holds up.
You know what? That's kind of like a thing we do.
We do kind of go with Jeff and Eric's Excellent Adventure. Sometimes we do a game where we go back in time. That's true. Except that we don't actually rewatch those films. We just talk about them, our memories of them. I think here he's talking about like we actually go and rewatch something from a while back.
That sounds like
homework, like preparation that we'd have to.
Eric.
Yeah, all right. Dallas.
Oh, what is this?
This Dallas used to be Butternubs, but he had to start using his real name on Facebook. That's the explanation there. He says, 20 questions, movie edition. The loser must review any movie the winner picks. No matter how bad, old, long, or kind. So we'd play a game of 20 questions, like where you're trying to guess. 20 questions is where it's, you have to ask yes or no questions, right? And to arrive at whatever the thing is the person's thinking of. Is that 20 questions? Is that the game?
I guess that's a game. But then I'd have to review a movie that I didn't want to review?
Yeah. Again, that sounds hard.
I do like the idea of the 20 questions. I like that. There could be something to do with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. And then where the loser has to do something.
Just like take off an article of clothing or something. No big deal. What?
I don't like the idea of making people have to watch movies as a punishment. That seems counterproductive to what movies are for.
Yeah. Wait, movies are not meant for punishment?
They shouldn't be. Some are, but...
Maybe a regular review of a classic 80s film both of you haven't seen for a long time and still see if it still holds up, kind of similar, like Dark Crystal or Commando or Ghostbusters. You know what? Steph says, please ditch character casserole.
Oh, man. That's one of our games that we play.
No, we like that too much.
Oh, Steph is entitled to his opinion, of course, but it really, that game is sweeping the nation. It's one of the most popular games in the country. Character casserole.
you know, for Steph's sake, maybe we should play that today.
I think we will. I think we should, if only to drive him away.
Yes.
What Steph suggests, though, about a review of a classic 80s film, we haven't seen it for a while. We do on occasion, we don't have an official feature for it, we do occasionally watch a movie and then talk about that we watched it again and whatever.
By the way, we haven't done that for a while. We've been traveling and whatnot, sure. Busy with the holidays, film festivals, everything. But we need to do that sometime soon.
That whole, what else did you watch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, but then we watched the same movie.
Oh, that thing. Oh, that you mean. Yeah. Oh, that. Okay, right. Yes.
I don't know if you guys know, but Eric and I have perfected a way to watch movies together, even though we're not in the same city.
Mm-hmm. It involves headphones and Netflix and Skype or FaceTime.
Four pairs of headphones.
Yeah, there's a lot. It is very complicated. A lot of levers and pulleys.
Yes.
A Rose McCoy. Says, movie theater stories or recommendations, which is the best theater in Portland, specific types of films, which has the best picture, etc. We used to be a Portland-based podcast when we were on a Portland internet radio station. Mm-hmm. And now we are less Portland-oriented. So that's not practical, unfortunately.
What's the one off of Sandy?
Roseway.
Sandy Boulevard? Yeah.
Roseway Theater. Great sound over there.
Roseway Theater is great.
Mm-hmm. And what else about the Roseway do you love?
The popcorn.
Yeah, the popcorn.
I dislike movie theater popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
Roseway cares about their popcorn.
Yeah.
It is
good popcorn. I remember you would not shut up about their popcorn. I remember that.
I still won't. You brought it up and I'm going on. Scott says a couple of ferns. Spruce up the place.
Along with the new couch. Yeah.
You know, I would not mind seeing a couple of plants in your background when you're doing the show.
I don't have any plants in my house. I've thought about getting plants.
Is it that you're worried about killing them?
That's part of it. I'm certain they would die. I just haven't gotten around to it, I guess. I haven't felt sufficiently compelled to get plants. If I had plants, I would enjoy it, but the process of actually, like, what kind of plant, and now I have to buy it and get it, that doesn't hold any interest for me. But if someone gave me a plant, I would take care of it.
If they gave you the plant with the knowledge of, hey, this one needs a little sunlight, or you water it once a week, you would want that too.
I could even look that up. I can Google that.
Oh.
If I long to know what kind of plant it is.
Look at you.
Yeah. If it was a nice, pretty plant, I could take care of a plant probably.
A nice, pretty one?
I don't want some ugly. Don't give me a cactus. Throw that in the trash.
Really?
Cactus, it might as well be a weed. Cactus. Just saying.
It's cutting edge thoughts on cactuses.
That is my hot take on cactus. I do not care for it as decoration. Out in the desert where it lives, that's fine. I have nothing against it. But it's not a plant I'm going to take into my house and take. It's like you wouldn't get a pet pigeon. Those are just sky rats. They live out by themselves. You wouldn't.
It's kind of funny that you didn't go for a porcupine.
Porcupine also, yeah.
Well, no, I'm just saying because, you know, the quills.
Yeah. I was thinking more just in terms of being omnipresent and not special and not pretty. And why would you? Like, oh, I'm going to get a pet squirrel. There's squirrels outside all over the place. You don't need a pet one. You don't want one in your house.
I don't think that would go well.
They're rabid.
Yeah.
Squirrels are all rabid. They all have rabies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't mean to stereotype, but it's true. The question of the week. That's what we did. We will take all these suggestions under advisement.
We'll change nothing, but we will think about each and every single one of them.
Mm-hmm. And we have some other ideas of our own that we might do to make improvements to the show and spice things up a little bit. Because, you know, we've been doing the show almost 5 years. Our fifth anniversary is in a couple of weeks.
Oof. What is year five? Is that gold? Is that silver?
Fifth anniversary. Well, let's ask Google here what the fifth anniversary gift is. It is wood.
All right. Oh, I'll get you wood. All right. So,
question of the week for next week.
Question of the week for next week. What movie universe deserves 7 parts? This is, of course, in line with Furious 7.
Mm-hmm. It's the most furious of all the Fast and Furious movies, and it's the 7th
one. It is so upset.
What other movie that currently, are we saying that only has one entry so far?
Yep, it only has one single entry, and it deserves,
seven
parts.
Yeah.
Here's an example of something that I think. Mm-hmm. Big Trouble in Little China.
Mm.
I think that movie deserves it, whether it's like through prequels or spinoffs or whatever. Give me seven parts of that world, and I'll be happy.
So you'd have Big Trouble in Little China. Then you would have Too Big, Too Little, Too China.
Yep, keep going.
And then Big Trouble in Little China, Tokyo Drift.
There, yeah.
And
I think the fourth one is just Fast and Furious. It gets rid of the Fast and the,
maybe,
right?
Or was that five?
So then it'd just be Big and Trouble, China.
Yeah. And then
China
5, China 6, and Big Trouble 7.
I think it'd be China-er.
China-er. More China-er. The most China.
Yeah. It'd be stuff. So there we go. So
there's an example.
And you can answer that question on our Facebook page. We will post it. You can find our Facebook page and all the stuff like that at moviebs.com.
Mm-hmm. You can also email us if you like at moviebspdx@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
And now, by popular demand, let's play a game of character casserole.
Oh, people love it.
Most people.
Yeah. All right. So, character casserole.
Kidding aside, I would be happy to hear from Steph why you don't enjoy character casserole. And of course, from anyone else. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe everyone hates this game.
Aww. Maybe.
But probably someone else would have mentioned it. But no, we're always, of course, glad to hear why specifically you do or do not enjoy something. And we can take that under advisement and see if we can make things better for everybody. That's what we want. We want to make things better for everybody. Right?
Yes.
Man. How do we play character casserole? You are going to the box office list, right?
Which one?
The
Box Office Mojo.
Box Office Mojo, and then you go for look at all time.
And then adjusted.
Adjust for inflation, yes. We're going to come up with three movies, and we're pulling from the list of the most successful movies ever to increase the likelihood that we've seen them. We're going to choose three movies, choose one character from each movie, and then make up a new movie with those three characters all together.
Yes.
As sort of a shared universe.
And you're going to go to a random number generator.
Random number generator.
Right now, and type in 1 through 200.
All right.
So these are the 200 highest grossing films adjusted for ticket price inflation.
Mm-hmm. Our first random number is 168.
168. Now, here's the favorite part for everybody. Eric, the year is 1987. It originally made $156 million. Adjusted, that's now $329
million.
Name that movie.
1987. It originally made how much? 100 and something?
56.
From 1987, I'm going to say that was...
It's rated R. Rated R.
Mm. Predator.
There is a rabbit involved.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? No, that wasn't rated R. It was a rabbit? 87. Yeah. A rabbit. What?
Fatal Attraction.
Oh, Fatal Attraction. Oh, good one. Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Fatal Attraction.
Who do we want, right?
We want Glenn Close, yeah.
Yeah,
we want Glenn Close, crazy rabbit lady.
I'll make sure to get her a character name so we don't keep calling her Glenn Close, crazy rabbit later. Lady. Goodness.
Next film, number 123.
123. Well, that takes us to 2005.
Okay.
Original gross, 290. Ooh. Now adjusted, 374 million.
2005.
Part of a franchise.
I was going to say, is it Revenge of the Sith?
No. That's...
That did come out in 2005, though.
Okay.
Part of a franchise, 2005. Does that involve a superhero?
No, not really.
Mm. Then I have no guesses.
Harry Potter and?
And the whichever one came out in 2005.
Goblet of Fire is correct.
The Goblet of Fire!
Let's go Hermione.
Okay.
By the way, Glenn Close's character name is Alex Forrest.
All right, so Alex Forrest and Hermione Granger.
and Hermione Granger. And now the third.
Those two are going to have some very different opinions on dating and relationships.
This is what I think. Yeah.
And then our third, number 109, the 109th highest grossing film of all time when adjusted for inflation.
1999.
Mm-hmm.
245 million, now adjusted, 397 million.
The Sixth Sense.
It's a sequel.
The Sixth Sense Part 2. The Seventh Sense. 99 sequel, Toy Story 2. Yeah, there we go.
Who should be in the mix with those two?
Jesse the cowgirl.
Oh, okay. So it's this is pretty much just like a retelling of Bridesmaids. All right, let's figure this out.
Except one of them's a cartoon. Or no, she's not a cartoon, she's a toy. So Jesse is the...
Guess what? One of our three knows magic, so Jesse can be a real girl if we want.
Ooh.
Little Pinocchio action going on.
Does she start as a living toy?
Yes.
Okay. Hermione is kind of cool, is okay, but Hermione is not freaked out because she's used to magic things. Like, oh, okay, here's a toy that talks and walks, whatever.
And then Jesse's like, hey, would you mind? And then Hermione's like, no, no big deal. And then poof.
Turns her into a real girl, but she's still the size of a doll. She's still the same size as the toy.
Oh, and for Hermione, it's like, well, what's wrong with that? That's like those what were those weird elf things?
Like house,
the
house
little
elves?
Golems. Oh yeah, or
Dobby.
Yeah,
Dobby the house elf.
Yeah, like that's the size of Dobby, pretty much, is what Jesse is. So that's no big deal.
Well, no, Hermione. I think Jesse's only like maybe 6-8 inches high. I think. Dobby was a couple of feet. I think.
How about this? Huh. Hermione, that's the whole goal. That's Jesse's goal in the movie is to be a real girl.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Now how does Alex Forrest get
involved? Meet up with Alex somehow. Let's see. This is going to have to be a prequel to Fatal Attraction because I think she must get killed at the end of Fatal Attraction, doesn't she?
She does because of screening.
Because she kills somebody, so she has to get killed or something.
No, but
she killed the rabbit.
Okay, so the original ending of Fatal Attraction is that she gets away with it, and test audiences were outraged. So then she doesn't, and Michael Douglas's wife spoiler alert from a 1987 film. Yeah. Michael Douglas's wife kills her in a bathtub.
That's right.
By
That's
shooting
right.
her in the chest.
Why do you remember that so in such detail?
I don't know.
Weird. Okay, so this is a prequel. Alex is probably crazy still.
This is how Alex becomes crazy.
This is how she became crazy. Crazy. It's going to be over a man. She is the sort of crazy person who becomes crazy because of a man.
Is it
Harry Potter?
Is it Mr. Potter? No, Hermione ends up with
what's his name?
What's his name?
The ginger. Ron.
Yeah. Ron Weasley. This is because of Ron Weasley.
Okay, so Hermione and Ron are happy together, living together after their Hogwarts experience, and then their neighbor is Alex Forrest, and she takes a liking to young Ron.
Yes. It's like post-college. It's their first apartment together. They're excited about the world.
He's a younger man. He's got that cute British accent, and Alex is smitten.
Ooh. So then Hermione has Jesse the toy because she just likes Jesse the toy. And she knows that she's, you know, real on occasion and has her own adventures, and that's no big deal. Mm-hmm. The problem is that Alex, very, very friendly, getting along with Ron and Hermione, just lovely. But
Ron and Hermione probably have kids?
No, not yet. Too soon.
Okay. All right.
But then Alex starts to steal little things from Hermione, trying to become her.
Oh, yeah.
And she takes Jesse. And that's one of the things. Like, Jesse is like, no, you don't understand. Like, Jesse comes back and is all panicked. And you guys don't understand. She's a psycho.
Well, how does she come back? Does she escape?
Yeah,
she escapes from Alex. Okay.
Yeah, like, and it's big and it's long and it's scary. Very much like Misery. It's like Misery, but with a toy and Alex.
Nice. I was gonna say that we could have a side movie where the other toys come rescue Jesse.
Sure, absolutely.
That'll be a side, but not
only that. Like, there's some like really awful things about like cutting off just not only Jesse's hair, but like maybe a foot, so she can't escape.
Right.
It's just awful, and the whole thing is Alex doesn't even know that Jesse can be real. Like, she's just doing this because she's a psycho, and it's like, ooh, this is
She's just tearing apart her neighbor's toy.
Yep. She's just that person.
Wow. So she is already kind of crazy. what yeah, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's true. It is, yeah.
Crazy was so a pre-existing condition for her.
Yeah, and Ron is he's not being seduced by her, but you know, there's something there. Yeah, it's interesting.
He doesn't see the threat. He doesn't see a problem here. Oh, it's this nice lady next door. She's nice to me. Yeah. She's harmless. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Hermione. That's what Ron sounds like. Don't worry about it. She's fine. She's just a nice lady next door.
It appears you're taking that note about funny voices a little too far.
Well, Ron also had a stroke. I don't know if that was mentioned. So then somehow we come to a showdown. Jesse is going to have to wind up saving the day. I feel like Jesse will save Hermione from Alex.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, is Hermione using magic against Alex, and Alex is just using the power of her craziness?
Yeah, sure. And not only that, Hermione knows, Hermione's always been by the book, and she knows she's not supposed to be using the magic in front of Muggles.
Sure, absolutely.
So there's that.
When it comes,
what if Alex actually like sees this magic, and then she's so crazy, she's like, yeah, I'm a wizard too.
Oh yeah, and she's delusional. Yeah,
because then maybe the toys are coming to life, and she thinks she's doing that kind of, and like whatever.
That's nice. I like that.
So there's something going on there.
And then as they're fighting the big final showdown between Hermione and Alex, somehow Alex gets the upper hand, and she's got the drop on Hermione somehow.
This is how I see it. She's got a big knife, just like in Fatal Attraction. And she's going for Hermione with the knife, and Jesse jumps in front and literally gets the stuffing beaten out of her
with that knife.
Yeah.
Simultaneous with that, Jesse has summoned her her animal friends, including a lot of local rabbits. So a lot of rabbits come and jump on Alex and like attack her.
Hang on. So Jesse has a lot of animal friends?
Well, sure, because she's the size of an animal. So she's like friends with animals. Okay. It makes sense to me that toys would be friends with animals. Why wouldn't they?
It's a good point. The point of why wouldn't they really checks out here.
Right. Yeah. And then that obviously sets up the rabbit thing for Alex later on.
Okay, so the knife thing and the rabbit thing are obvious. Maybe Alex seduces Ron a little bit, but he's so clumsy around Hermione. So it's like, why would he even understand that he's being hit on by another woman?
Right. He's innocent and a little dim.
Yes. Clearly, as seven books and eight movies showed us.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good one. I like that. That's how you play character casserole. See, what's wrong with that? That was fine.
It was fine. There was nothing wrong with that.
And the title of that movie would be...
You did it.
That's where it falls apart. We never come up with a title for the character casserole.
The attraction of wizards.
Oh, how about the witch next door? Because who's it referring to?
Exactly.
Ah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh. Actually, that title needs to be something in general.
The witch next door.
And it's literally like, well, it's a witch, but then there's somebody who's, you know, not that nice.
Right. So who's the real witch here?
Oh, and then they punch each other after they say that line in the movie. This is for anybody with that movie attached to it, that title attached to it.
Take that suggestion. Have punching.
Yeah.
All right. That's how you play character casserole. And that's basically the gist of the show.
For this all you first-time listeners.
Yeah, I think this has been probably a good example of what a regular show would be like. So this is a good rehearsal. Now we'll do like a real show. And
they also probably get an idea of why we're saying subscribe to the show, but don't feel like you have to listen to
it. Exactly. Don't just feel compelled to listen. Subscribe.
That's all you
download
have to do.
Let us see the numbers, because the numbers make us feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to our new host, oneofus.net. Which is a fine website where they've got some other podcasts, I guess. I know they have one that's it's called in the Locker Room or Inside the Locker Room, right?
Yes.
And it's not a podcast where they talk about what athletes look like naked, which I assumed is what it was. It's about sports, I guess. Instead,
how many did you listen to all the way through before you finally gave up?
I made it through about a dozen of them before I realized, well, they are not going to talk about what athletes look like naked. But that's hosted some people that we know and some people we don't know. That's it. For the combination. This is like you, Jeff Baer. People who like movies but also sports.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And they have some other shows, too, that are probably also great. I'm sure they're great. They're all great. All the shows are great on oneofus.net. And thank you to them for being our new hosts.
Yes.
We're glad.
We are.
And let's see. The movies that we saw, Get Hard, we didn't care a lot for. Not terrible, but man, it's a wasted opportunity.
Yes.
It Follows is really good.
It is.
Scary. Mm-hmm. It's tense and ooh.
It's spine tingly.
It does. It tingles the spine is what it does.
Yep.
For question of the week, please tell us what movie, like Fast and the Furious, warrants a 7-film franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And feel free to elaborate on further plots and things that would happen. Whatever. Get as creative as you want. It's an essay question. It's not multiple choice. And I think that's all. That's the whole show, right?
That's the whole show. That's it. That's what we do.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
So for Movie Yes with Baer and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.